नमो ओम विष्णु प्रिय कृष्ण प्रस्ताय बुद्धदेव श्रीमती भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नमः नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारण एन विशेष शनिवार
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Devahutiruvacha. Lakshanam Maharadinam. Prakriti Purushasya cha. Sarupam lakshate misham, yena tat paramartikam, yata sankeshu katitam, yanmulam tat pachakshate, bhakti yogasya me margam, Buhi Vishtarasa Prabho.
Devahuti Uvacha. Devahuti said. So Devahuti now, after hearing so much of the Sankhya philosophy from her son Kapila Muni, she's going to reply. What did she hear in the last chapter? In chapter 28. Excuse me? Mostly the process of bhakti yoga in the form of yoga, which leads, meaning astanga yoga, or astanga yoga, which leads to meditation upon the Lord within the heart. In the previous chapter, that was chapter 28. Which is entitled Kapila, its instructions on devotional service. In 27, Kapila Muni has instructed her on material nature, understanding material nature. it's such an interesting, after Kapila Muni describes material nature to her, she asked her last question about that was, my dear Brahmana, speaking to her son, does material nature ever give release to the spirit soul? And she has a reason for asking that. Since one is attracted to the other eternally, how is there separation possible? It feels like that sometimes, you know, if you got rid of all your material characteristics, you wonder if there would be anything left. So if there is any separation possible between matter and spirit? In the prior chapter, as a prerequisite to understanding material nature, the entanglement of the soul in material nature, Kapila Muni has described the fundamental principles of material nature, which basically was the creation of the universe. So everything springs ultimately from this Mahavishnu, Karna Dakshaya Vishnu, and then from that, and upon his glance at the Mahatattva, everything springs from that. And so he's really explained quite a lot to his mother, and now she's going to, and the first chapter was more an introduction which described the glories of devotional service. So after hearing quite so much from her son, now she's going to respond to that, because it is the nature of someone who hears properly, because the hearing shouldn't go in here and either go out there or just immediately come out our mouth. It has to like sit somewhere in between, and it has to be contemplated. And actually what we're meant to do, obviously, and why the Bhagavatam class is in the morning is it should give us some food for thought, from some things to think about during the day. If we immediately leave everything that we've heard when we leave the room, or sometimes our mind leaves the room a lot before our body even, or sometimes, I'll even say with my own experience, my body gets there and my mind never even enters the room. My mind just stays outside somewhere or wanders around somewhere in the sky. But one should be hearing in an active way. It should interact, what we hear, should interact with our consciousness. And after all, who are we associating with through this process of hearing? Sukadeva Goswami is speaking this to Maharaj Prickett. Sutta Goswami is speaking to this to the sages of Namasaranya. Who is speaking to who in the inside of that? Who said that? Yes, Maitreya Muni is speaking to? Yes. And here, and inside of that even, Kapila Muni is speaking to Devahuti, and Srila Prabhupada has, using reference, the Acharya's comments, Srila Swami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur especially, then he's speaking to us for all our... for our benefit, so we should hear in an active way. And perhaps we will get the exact key we are looking for that will open the door to the spiritual world. So Devahuti Avacha, Devahuti said, Lakshanam, symptoms, Mahaadinam, of the Mahatattva, and so on. So she's going to describe, and she is describing some of the things that she's heard. So you've already described the lakshanam, the symptoms of the maha adinam, of the maha tattva, the mahat. Very often the mahat means the mahat tattva, and adi means also in addition other things as well. So you've already described the symptoms or the characteristics. Lakshanam also means characteristics and symptoms of the Mahat Adinam, of the Mahat Tattva, and so on. Prakriti, of material nature, because from the Mahat Tattva, the entirety of material nature is expanded. Purushasya, of the spirit. Cha, and Swarupam, the nature. Lakshate is described. So much has been described. The spirit, the supreme Purusha, who glances at the Pradhan, it is called at first. Pradhan means, what does Pradhan mean? Yes, but what does it literally mean, Pradhan? First, yes. And in a school, in a Hindi-speaking school, the teacher is called the Pradhanacharya. He's the headmaster of the school. Head teacher. The first teacher. So Pradhan means the first. So the Lord as Mahavishnu glances at this Pradhan or first element. And somewhere this Pradhan is very mysterious. It's somewhere between matter and spirit. And it is the unmanifested material modes of nature. And he glances at this Pradhan. And within that glance are the living entities, time, the karma of the living entities. And then with the infusion of the glance and those objects within the glance, plus his own potency, that Pradhan starts to change. And then, as Kapila Muni explained, it changes into the Mahat Tattva. And from the Mahat Tattva, the first thing is produced is this clarity of consciousness, and then false ego comes, and then from false ego combining with the modes of goodness, passion, ignorance, all the rest of the material manifestation occurs. So it all begins with the Purusha. So that Purusha, or that person who glances, is called Mahavishnu, and he's an expansion of Shankarshan, who's an expansion of the original Shankarshan, who's an expansion of Baladev, who's an expansion of Krishna, and therefore we say Govindam Adi Purusham. He is the original person. So the Purusha is a person, so it all begins with a person. Either on the material level or on the spiritual level, it all begins with a person. This is not an atheistical philosophy, in case you haven't noted it. It all begins with the Purusha, Purushasya. So she's saying that you've explained all these things Lakshate has described. Amisham, of those that we've just heard, yena, by which, tat parama artikam, the true nature of them. You've already explained the true nature of these things, because through our own philosophical speculation, we cannot understand the true nature either of the Purusha, the Supreme Person who is behind everything, or of the material nature, or how it comes into being. But you've already explained the true nature of these things. Yata, as Sankeshu, in Sankhya philosophy. Katitam, so you've already explained the true nature of all these things according to Sankhya philosophy. Katitam is explained. Yat, of which, mulam, ultimate end. So you've explained this according to the Sankhya philosophy, of which the mulam, mulam can mean the end, but also mulam also means the root. So the root is the end. If you trace, say there's the root of the tree, and if you trace, usually we think of the end of the tree as the topmost branch, but another way of looking at it is if you're tracing to the source, the ultimate end is the root. You have to go back to that point to understand the source of the tree. So therefore, of which the end, the ultimate end, or the mula, the mulam, tat, that, prachakshate, they call, so the ultimate end of which, you've explained all this by Sankhya Yoga, the ultimate end of which they call, and then the next word is bhakti yogasya, of devotional service. You've explained, So you've already explained all this to me, and the ultimate end of which is devotional service. Because everything that Kapila Muni is describing is to lead his mother, as well as us, to the point of view of devotional service. Bhakti Yogasya, of devotional service. And what does devotional service mean? What does devotional service mean? Yeah? What does Ahaitaki Pratiyata mean? Uninterrupted. Yes. But there's more, too. Thank you. That was correct. What else? What else does devotional service mean? Pleasing Krishna's senses. Who said that? Yeah. Do you know what the Sanskrit verse of that is? Uh-huh. Anyone know what the Sanskrit verse of that is? That's the end of it. No, that's Yes, that's it. Yeah. This is from the I can't remember, Narada Pansaratna, I think, with Rupa Goswami. Huh? But that's where, it's quoted by Rupa Goswami. But that's his, when he describes devotional service as anyabilasita sanyam gyanakama anavrita, he defines pure devotional service as that, that positive desire to please Krishna. When you're always thinking of him in a positive way, anukula, because we can also think of someone in a negative way. And in fact, if we're angry at someone, the intensity of our thinking of them is so intense and you can't get it out of your mind. But that's not devotional service. It's not pratikulasya, but anukulasya. In a very positive way. So Rupa Goswami describes it, and then he gives this verse from the Narada Pansaratna, I believe, to give another reference to it. Tat parat vena niyamalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam. To please the master of the senses, with the senses, with our own senses, that is called, without any other sense of identity other than Krishna's service, servant. So while doing that, pleasing the Lord's senses, attempting to please Him, the sense of identity that we have is, I am Krishna's servant. And there is nothing else is added to that. Because everything other than that is an artificial imposition on the consciousness. And therefore we are called conditioned souls. We are controlled by these other identities. So when all the other identities are gone, and we're thinking of ourselves, we're considering ourselves as Krishna's servant, and that our existence is meant for His pleasure, that is called bhakti. So she's asking about, that's the end of Sankhya. So Kapila Muni has described the entirety of material nature, and he's described the yoga process as well, jnana and yoga, to bring us to the point of understanding bhakti. And that's what Devahuti is going to understand, is going to question about now. So bhakti yogasya, of devotion service, made to me margam, the path. Bruhi, please explain. Vistara, sa, at length. So now please explain to me at length this path of bhakti yoga. Prabhu, my dear Lord Kapila. So here's the English translation. Devahuti inquired, my dear Lord, you have already very scientifically described the symptoms of the total material nature and the characteristics of the spirit according to the Sankhya system of philosophy. Now I shall request you to explain the path of devotional service, which is the ultimate end of all philosophical systems. Please tell me about devotional service. So please repeat the verse. Devahuti inquired, my dear Lord, where is the word my dear Lord in the Sanskrit? Prabhu. Just imagine if we were remembering what Prabhu means when we call each other Prabhu. Usually when someone says Prabhu, it means, could you please do this? You're about to get an order. My dear Lord, you have already very scientifically described the symptoms of the total material nature and the characteristics of the spirit according to the Sankhya system of philosophy. Now I shall request you to explain the path of devotional service, which is the ultimate end of all philosophical systems. Which word in the verse meant ultimate end? Mulam, yes. It's the root also. Everything is springing from that. Here is Srila Prabhupada's purport. Please listen carefully. In the 29th chapter, which chapter were we up to? Yes. The glories of devotional service are elaborately explained. And the influence of time on the conditioned soul is also described. And why that will be described will be explained in later verses. So here are the two topics of this chapter. What are they? The glories of devotional service and time. That's what we have to look forward to. Because if we don't take the devotional service, we're under the influence of material time. And when we hear about what the effect of material time is, that will push us to take to devotional service even further. So at the influence of time on the conditioned soul is described. The purpose of elaborately describing the influence of time is to detach the conditioned soul from his material activities, which are considered to be simply a waste of time. In the previous chapter, material nature, the Spirit, and the Supreme Lord, or Supersoul, are analytically studied. And in this chapter, the principles of Bhakti Yoga, or devotional service, the execution of activities in the eternal relationship between the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are explained. I read that last sentence a little quickly, because I wanted to see if anyone will remember it. What was the essence of how did Prabhupada, he says in this chapter, the principles of Bhakti Yoga or devotional service are explained. And then in between, he's put a definition of what Bhakti Yoga is. But I'll read it again more slowly, make it easier. Because it's a very, very interesting definition of what Bhakti Yoga is. The execution of activities in the eternal relationship between the living entities and the personality of Godhead. So what we're attempting to do as we practice sadhana bhakti, it literally means practice, to practice, develop, engage in the practices which develop our eternal loving relationship between ourselves and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is devotional service and practice. These are the practices that develop that. And here is the purpose to be always acting in our relationship with Krishna. There is one. I heard Prabhupada, the introduction to Chaitanya Charitamrita. Raise your hand if you have read that, the introduction to Chaitanya Charitamrita. Not everyone, but some devotees. That introduction to Chaitanya Charitamrita, they were originally lectures that Prabhupada gave at 26 Second Avenue in 1966. My guess, and it is a guess, that he was translating Chaitanya Charitamrita, and as he was writing teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and especially he started speaking about the teachings that Mahaprabhu gave to Sanatana Goswami. So that's what was going on at that time, and quite soon after that, the book actually came out. Well, not quite soon, but in 1968 it came out. So Prabhupada was actually working on that at that time. And in it, he explained what the meaning of Chaitanya Charitamrita is. And Chaitana, he explained, means consciousness. And Chaitanya Charita means the activities. Amrita means, Mrita means death. And amrita means without any death or eternity. So the activities of the living entity in eternity. Because right now, all our experiences of the living entities, activities are not in eternity, but we experience with ourselves and looking at at others. The activities of the living entities trapped within the realm of matter, conditioned by the material nature. Conditioned means controlled. Controlled by so many factors within the material nature. This is the characteristic of all the living entities in this world, all the conditioned souls, all the Baddha jeeves. Baddha means bound. We are tightly bound, controlled by the modes of material nature, under the influence of time, which is going to be described at the end of this chapter. And the result is, like any situation of bondage, it is torture. Prabhupada, when he was in Russia, when he visited Russia for a few days, he said, I'm in this room. He was describing the society that was existing at that time. I am in this room, and I may not want to go out. But as soon as you tell me that you cannot go out, then it is torture. It is prison. It is. You may not even want to go out. But as soon as someone says you are not allowed to go out, one is in bondage. And it is such a restriction on the freedom of the soul. And therefore it is very uncomfortable. And this is the situation of every living entity who is conditioned by the material nature, bound. Baddha jeev, baddha means bound, and it is very uncomfortable. And therefore, what everyone is trying to do is seek freedom. And people seek money because money means power. And power means the ability to do what you want when you want to do it. And therefore, that's why so money is such an issue. For everyone, it's because everyone is feeling so bound, and it's a falsely expressed desire to not be controlled. And all we see in the material world are the activities of living entities who are controlled by different combinations of the modes of material nature. And I so frustrated because the nature of the soul is being covered and compressed. And what the soul is longing for is to act freely. But no one knows what that free activity of the soul is. And we tend to think that it is the free activity of the soul is to engage in unlimited sense gratification. To do whatever you want means to gratify the senses, but the senses are never, never satisfied. Because, for example, we all like, what's your favorite flavor of ice cream? Who will admit their favorite flavor of ice cream here? Yeah, okay. I don't even know what that is. What is that? No, but everyone else does. Okay, but just imagine how much can you eat and it will give you pleasure? This is the favorite taste. So you can eat this much and it will give you pleasure, but if you have unlimited hokey pokey ice cream, how much could you eat after all? Could you eat? No one could even eat this amount. It's true, isn't it? If you had a whole room, just imagine if this whole temple room was full of hokey pokey ice cream. It wouldn't be heaven. It wouldn't be exactly what we were longing for. No, the senses have their limitation. But that's more or less the dream of the conditioned soul, to have an unlimited facility for sense pleasure, sense enjoyment. But it's clearly an illusion. And people have that, who fulfill their dreams on the sense level, just become so frustrated and so cynical and so bored. I remember many, many years ago, I was in Hong Kong when we were teaching some very wealthy young Indian children something about Krishna consciousness. And I remember going into this young 8-year-old boy's room, and it was
The walls were shelves of games and toys. The walls weren't walls, but they were all shelves lined with, it was almost like a toy store or something. And he would just take one out and put it down and open it up and throw it back and take another down and open it up and put it back and pull this down, and hoping that there would be some relief or happiness on that level. But the more one has on the sense level, rather than bringing the satisfaction that we're longing for, it brings the frustration that we're trying to avoid, that we're imagining. When we don't have things, we're imagining on the material level that if I have them, then I'll be happy. But if we have them, we become more and more miserable. And we really, really, if one wants to progress in devotional life, one really must become convinced about this point. And if one isn't convinced about this point, one can take another, there's many ways to find out. We can hear about it in Shastra. We can take another dip into the ocean of the material world to see if we could this time find the happiness that the soul is longing for. Or we could read the newspapers, and that's probably even a better way than trying to make the attempt ourselves. This is the glory of reading a newspaper, because we don't have to. We can vicariously see that it's not working out there in the material world without having to directly experience it ourselves again and again and again. But this is all we know, practically speaking. But Chaitanya Charitamrita, as Prabhupada explained, and as Bhakti Yoga is defined here by Prabhupada, explains to us another whole realm. Another realm of activities. Not of the bound soul, but of the free soul. Free from the fetters, the bondage of material existence. What is the soul like? And Mahaprabhu teaches this. And it is eternal relationship between the living entities and the personality of Godhead. And this is what the Bhagavatam is gradually leading us to understand, to awaken our relationship with Krishna, our loving relationship with Krishna. So Bhakti Yoga, or devotional service, this chapter, the principles of Bhakti Yoga, or devotional service, the execution of activities in the eternal relationship between the living entities and the personality of Godhead, are explained. And Prabhupada has described it in one sense, sedate way. The execution of activities in the eternal, it sounds very dutiful, but actually it's fully spontaneous and based on our loving relationship with Krishna. Everything based on love is spontaneous. But to practice that, to learn how to love Krishna, there we have to execute activities or execute duties. Prabhupada gave the example of years ago, especially in India, when boys and girls were married at a very young age, sometimes 7, sometimes 10, sometimes 12, sometimes 15. But they wouldn't live together until they were mature. So what would happen at first is the elders would engage the two in activities that would develop a loving relationship. The affectionate relationship would develop. So they would help, they would assist the girl, or the young girl, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, she would assist some of their adult, her mother and or some of the other, or aunties or whatever, in cooking some very tasty food, and then she would bring it to her very young husband. They would be married, but they wouldn't stay together. And gradually, she would be giving him all kinds of delectable dishes, and gradually, that would be the natural, it would awaken the natural relationship between them. Affection, deep affection on both sides would awaken by a very a prescribed, more or less mechanical activity would awaken something that was quite spontaneous. So that's the example that the Prabhupada gave to explain this point, how something quite mechanical can awaken something quite natural and spontaneous, loving affection. So the activities of sadhana bhakti, the vidhi, or the rules and regulations, the yam nyam of vaidhi bhakti, are meant to awaken spontaneous love. Nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatta vidhi sadhyata, which is within the heart. So this is what it's explained. So on one side, devotional service is explained in this chapter. And what's explained in this chapter on the other side? Time. So we have a choice, practically speaking. We want to remove the fetters, or do we want to be under the influence of time, material time, and suffer all the results? So now Prabhupada will explain more in the second paragraph about bhakti yoga or devotional service. Please listen carefully. Bhakti yoga, devotional service, is the basic principle of all systems of philosophy. All philosophy which does not aim for devotional service to the Lord is considered merely mental speculation. But of course, bhakti yoga with no philosophical basis is more or less sentiment. Yes. There are two classes of men. Some consider themselves intellectually advanced and simply speculate and meditate, and others are sentimental and have no philosophical basis for their propositions. Neither of these can achieve the highest goal of life. Or, if they do, it will take them many, many years. Vedic literature therefore suggests that there are three elements. How many? Three elements. Namely, the Supreme Lord, one, the living entity, two, and their eternal relationship, three. And the goal of life is to follow the principles of bhakti, or devotional service, and ultimately attain to the planet of the Supreme Lord in full devotion and love as an eternal servitor of the Lord. Did anything strike anyone in that paragraph? Does anyone remember anything? Did anyone find anything that seemed meaningful to them? Well, did anyone remember anything? Yeah.
The three that strikes as a relationship between one and two.
Yes. Between Krishna, us, and our relationship. Actually, we can't define who we are. Just like defining who we are without our relationship with Krishna is an incomplete definition. Just like if I ask you what your legal name is, at least in the West, there's two parts to name. There's the first name and the family name. So when we define ourselves, really, if we want to introduce ourselves to someone, or for legal reasons, we say our first name or given name and the family name, because a family name is in relationship to a family, to something else. And it's an incomplete understanding. Our identity is incomplete without understanding our relationship to our family. That subtly is in there within the Western culture, that you have a relationship with your family. And that's part of who you are. Now, no one really thinks like this nowadays, because very often the families are so, we want to be as far away from our family as possible. I mean, that happens too. But it's, and that's what, because I live in Perth, and about half the people in Perth are escapees from their families who live on the east coast of Australia.
Because, you know, there's a big desert in between. I'm surprised how many people really have done that. That's Kali Yuga, but really there's an incomplete feeling about who I am without a relationship to our family. So similarly, even if we understand that we're souls, eternal, without our relationship with Krishna, that identity as a soul is incomplete. And one will be lost without that. So yes, there's Krishna, there's us, and there's the relationship. And that is the relationship that everyone is really longing for. We should not define ourselves really without the dasa or dasi at the end. It is an incomplete definition. And that's what initiation again means. It's a formal acceptance of the position of being a servant of Krishna. And here's the last paragraph. Well, okay, so in one sentence, could anyone sum up the last paragraph that we just read? It was a definition of bhakti yoga. He was describing something.
The ultimate aim is to live out of love for God.
Yes, but a lot of that paragraph was about, but there are two different kinds of people. Remember that part? The people who, intellectual people who tend to like speculate, and the feeling type of people, the hearts and the heads. And what did Prabhupada say about that? Yes, and therefore we need both. We need the feelings and we need the philosophy. The philosophy has to guide the feelings. But bhakti yoga has both, and both are required. And if we try to have one without the other, we won't get to the end, or we will get to the end. But what did Prabhupada say? It will take neither of these can achieve the highest goal, or if they do, it will take them many, many years. Bahunam janamanante gyanamam prapadyante vasudeva savamiti samahatma sadodama. And now there's a final paragraph. So the first paragraph of Prabhupada's purport was describing about this chapter, the two parts of the chapter, bhakti yoga and time, and then in this paragraph he's explained that there is, in bhakti yoga, it's to develop our eternal relationship with Krishna, and there's philosophy and sentiment, both in bhakti yoga. And the goal is to attain the planet of the Supreme Lord and in full devotion and love as an eternal servitor of the Lord. Now here's the last paragraph. And you already know I'm going to ask you about it, so please listen carefully. Sankhya philosophy, so there's the topic of the third paragraph. Sankhya philosophy is the analytical study of all existence. So now we know what Sankhya philosophy is. One has to understand everything by examining its nature and characteristics. This is called acquirement of knowledge. But one should not simply acquire knowledge without reaching the goal of life or the basic principle for acquiring knowledge, bhakti yoga. If we give up bhakti yoga and simply busy ourselves in the analytical study of the nature of things as they are, then the result will be practically nil. It is stated in the Bhagavatam that such engagement is something like husking a paddy. What does husking a paddy mean? You don't get very much husking of paddies in New Zealand. What does husking a paddy mean?
Wasting time.
Husking a paddy Paddy means what? It's nothing to do with Irishmen or anything either. Yeah, paddy means rice. So husking it means when the rice grows. See, we all live in, you know, we're city dwellers. You know, we don't know where the food comes from. Rice comes from plants, boys and girls. I remember when I first went to Gita Nagari, many, many years ago also, but it was potato harvesting time. And it was the most amazing thing to me. They put this machine in the ground and all the potatoes came out. And there were potatoes everywhere. I thought, this is the most amazing thing. This is why potatoes, sometimes when you buy them, they have dirt on them. They come from the ground. And there's so many of them. This is incredible. And it was really so exciting for me. I was teaching at that time, me and the children, we'd go around, and pick the potatoes up and put them in bags. It was so exciting. We'd store it for the winter. But rice also comes from little plants. You put the little plants in the ground, and then they grow into the big plants, and then at some point, the little grains come out, and then the plants die, and then you have to separate the rice, which are the seeds. You have to separate. Sorry for teasing you like this, making you believe it's a fourth grade science class. And the little seeds come out. And the trick is you have to separate it. And there's many systems for doing this. In the villages in India, they beat it, and then they let the wind just blow it, just blow away the husk from the actual grain, which is wanted. The example is that if one takes rice that's already been beaten, and the rice plant and the grain's already been removed, and then there's no rice in it anymore. And then if one takes that and thinks I have something very wonderful and I'm trying to get something from that, one gets nothing for his hard work of trying to husk it except the hard work itself. That's the example. Lord Brahma gives this in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. This is Lord Brahma's example, actually. If one gives up bhakti yoga simply to busy ourselves in the analytical study of the nature of things as they are, then the result will be practically nil. You won't get anything. If one gives up bhakti yoga just to use his intelligence to try to understand the material world and try to get to the absolute truth in this way, one gets nothing any more than one gets... it's something like husking a paddy. There is no use beating the husk if the grain has already been removed. By the scientific study of material nature, the living entity, and the supersoul, one has to understand the basic principle of devotional service to the Lord. If one doesn't, that's the rice in the process. Devotional service is what is meant to be attained. Devotional service means what, again? Bhakti. What does bhakti mean? How did Prabhupada define that? In their relationship in eternity here. The eternal relationship between the living entities and the personality of Godhead. And what is that eternal relationship? It's bhakti. It's devotional service. It's loving service. It's falling in love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and having nothing else in one's consciousness except the desire to please Him. That's the goal. And that occurs in the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions or comments? So the last paragraph was about Sankhya. The analytical study of all existence, and Prabhupada for the paragraph, he says, one should know that the goal of this scientific study of material existence, the goal of Sankhya is bhakti. And without bhakti, without devotion, if one just is studying the material world, it's like beating the rice with the husk of rice where there is no more, the paddy, the husk of rice where there's no more rice inside. Oh, the only benefit is one gets some exercise. There's no rice will come. Exercise means hard work. Nothing comes out of it unless one comes to the point of bhakti, devotion to Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Real spiritual emotion and just sentiment?
Yes. Well, first theoretically, what's the difference? Philosophically, what's the difference between a spiritual emotion or sentiment or a material emotion? Well, certainly that's true. That's true. What else? The difference? Huh? Okay. But what else? What's the difference between a material emotion and a spiritual emotion?
One's based on satisfying our essence.
Yes, certainly. Huh? Yes. Excuse me? Yeah. Yes.
One is the foundation of the first of all understanding.
Yes. Yes. As you probably are guessing, I have something very specific in my mind. Where does one come from? What's the difference between where each of them come from? Yes, yeah. But where, that's exactly, but just a little bit more honed in on where does one come from? What's the difference in where they spring from? Yeah, but where do they spring from? Where do they spring from? Where does love for Krishna spring from? From the heart? You mean that muscle that's pumping blood? Where does it come from? Yes, it comes from the soul. And where does the sentiment come from? It springs from matter. And therefore it's one is eternal, one is temporary, one dwindles, and one is eternal like that. So all the characteristics that were mentioned, these are the difference between something springing from the soul itself and coming from matter. And what's the difference between sentimental and sentiment? Because we decry sentimentalism, and Prabhupada mentions it here. It's not sufficient.
Sentimental has no philosophical understanding.
Yes. And sentiment. Is sentiment proper in devotional service? Yeah, in fact, in Bhaktari Samhita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion, this is, I can't remember, one of the elements of rasa is a sentiment, a staibhav, a particular sentiment or mood. But if it's material, if it springs from the material platform. I've heard sentimental as defined, it was in a writing book, that is undue emotion or place or when more emotion than the object is legitimately due is placed. So really speaking, that if we place a lot of emotion in anything of the material world, really ultimately that's sentimental. It's undue. It's overdone because it's not ours. It's temporary and we're going to suffer. But when we place so that's sentimental, and the best definition that I really know of sentimental is when we place our sentiments where they really shouldn't be placed, and that's to objects of the material world. And when we place the sentiment where it belongs on Krishna and it's springing from the soul itself, it's pure. Then that's appropriate. I've also heard, I just perhaps yesterday even, I heard Prabhupada giving a lecture in Vrindavan. I heard a lecture that Prabhupada was giving in Vrindavan in 1972. And he was saying that, he gave an example that that if there's bhakti there, then you can't do things like smoke. This is what he specifically said. Because the two aren't compatible. So one may have a sentiment of bhakti and then be engaging in activities that are inappropriate for actual bhakti, and that, so that means that the sentiment that he has for bhakti is something, but it's not yet springing from the soul. So when one, if one is engaging in pure devotional service, and, or Prabhupada would generally say, you know, at least following the rules and regulations and chanting properly, then there's a possibility of some true emotion for Krishna to come out. But one shouldn't practice bhakti and then and be smoking and stuff like that and then think everything he feels is pure. But it's an interesting question. We could discuss it further. We've discussed around it, perhaps, and not given any. But Prabhupada also said a little bit on the other side that even when a non-devotee visits Vrindavan, it's written in the Krishna book, he will experience separation from Krishna, showing the glories of Sri Vrindavan Dham. So a non-devotee means maybe not following principles, but yet there are certain things that are so powerful in devotional service, they evoke some actual, from the soul, something that's real. The deities sometimes do that. There's a story that I heard many years ago about when, has anyone seen the deities Radha Gokulananda at Bhaktivedanta Manor? Yes. Anyone else? Yes. Yes. So when they were just opening the manor, they were applying for something with the local council, some approval of some sort. So part of that, there was one inspector came around, and he wanted to, the temple room was designated for worship or something or study. So he came in with his clipboard, and the deities were there, Radha Gokulananda were there, and his duty was to inspect each of the rooms to make sure that the proper purpose was there. So he, without his shoes, he walked in the temple room, you know, with his clipboard and, you know, inspecting this and that. And then he walked out and said, "I never thought it was going to be like this." He was actually touched. And anyone can have this experience. You may, you know, some days we're in a good mood, some days we're in a bad mood, sometimes we're more covered than others. But just stand right in front of the deities and put your attention on the Tagore Chandra. You know, start at their lotus feet. And then by the time you get to their eyes, just keep going up. And it shifts, it must shift one's consciousness. They must shift their, they infuse the power of the deities, of Nitai Gaura. They infuse the consciousness with something out of this world. And they've so kindly have come specifically to do that. And we, of course, we tend to take them for granted. But yet, if one will actually stand before them, and apply one's consciousness to their lotus feet, the real person inside is affected. And the same thing with kirtan, so powerful, and the holy dham, the association of devotees, and which other one didn't I mention? There's five, panchanga bhakti, very powerful, Srimad Bhagavatam. Very powerful, these five. And Srila Rupa Goswami says that even if one puts a little attention to these any of them, what to speak of all of them. Even if one doesn't have faith, one will make great advancement. And if one thinks about it, these five are what Prabhupada wove in what we call the morning program. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, chanting the holy names, association with devotees in a holy place. This is the morning program. So we give that definition, but yet the deities, the holy names, the Bhagavatam, etc., the Dhams, association of devotees are so powerful they can squeeze water out of a rock, the rock of my heart. And some longing can occur that, oh, I don't want this material life. I want to be a devotee. I want to be a servant of Krishna. And then maybe we walk right out the door and we completely forget everything, but yet that impression is there. There's been some impression on the hard rock of my heart has been carved in. And that is what's mine. That's what I've gained in this life. Everything else will be taken away, but that's mine, that impression that I want to be a devotee. It may take some time, but I want to be a devotee. Because there's a taste, and that was Prabhupada's secret. I'll tell you right now, that was Prabhupada's secret. First of all, everything in the association of a person like that was surcharged, because he was so powerful with all those items, with see Brajadam in his heart, so powerful that you'd be in his association for a few moments, and he was carrying such a sweetness with him that you'd want to taste that. You'd want it. And then he would tell you how you can get it. And it sounded so simple. All you have to do is chant Hare Krishna. And just serve. You know, serve, be engaged, always think of Krishna. But then, when that association was withdrawn, we thought, yeah, Prabhupada said all we have to do is chant Hare Krishna and do this and that. But then we saw without that the heat of that powerful sun-like presence of that personality that we became cool and cooler and cold. So therefore that association that brings life to the process. But without that association, and sometimes we find ourselves without us. Sometimes we can find little fires to warm our hands a little bit by, or whatever. But then we have to do a little. We have to apply ourselves to that panchanga bhakti with some determination. Otherwise, we can become very cold. And if we become cold in spiritual life, we'll be forced to, under the influence of time. We don't want that, so we take the association of devotees. We stand in front of the deities a little extra long. We try to chant attentively and with some calling to Krishna. We read Srimad Bhagavatam, and we, you know, just hearing, oh, Prabhupada is giving me some instruction here. Bhakti yoga, devotional service, is the basic principle of all systems of philosophy. Something for us to think about. Well, what does that mean? It is the basic principle of all systems of philosophy. What does that mean? Is there any relevance of that to me? Other than telling other people that? Does it have any... What does it mean? Think about these things. All philosophy which does not aim for devotion and service to the Lord is considered merely mental speculation. When Prabhupada would say merely mental speculation, he wasn't being complimentary. He's basically saying it's all useless. Do we really believe that? I should think, do we really accept that? Are there other things? Is it worthwhile to get into Beethoven and Bach or whatever, or the finer things of life? Is there value in it? But then Prabhupada says there's none, but yet I find in my heart I do value these things. Good literature or whatever. These things can all be used. Everything can be used to bring us to Krishna. And that's a science, how to do that. Because what do we do if we find that we have other desires? They have to be channeled towards Krishna, and we can't prescribe for ourselves. But we have to come to the point we understand. We should think about, in other words, the point being that we should think about what we read. It gives us something to do with our minds during the day too, that will help us. Any other questions or comments? Very fortunate. And we're all, yes, on this end we have Prabhupada, this end we have Nitai Gaurachandra, and we are in between. We should keep in between. Did you want to? Yeah. Did I say that? Oh, in the material world. Yes.
So what about the mode of ignorance? How can we understand that that's also very frustrating?
What does the mode of ignorance lead to according to the Bhagavad Gita? Huh? Bewilderment. Madness. Illusion. In other words, ignorance deepens one's ignorance. So the question is, how can we understand that ignorance isn't happiness? I mean, I'm teasing a little bit, but yeah, that's our culture, isn't it? Ignorance means happiness. Ignorance is bliss. 'Tis folly to be wise where ignorance is bliss. But if you just look at people who are deeper ignorance, no one thinks they're happy. They're miserable, so miserable. If ignorance leads to further ignorance, so someone at the top level of ignorance should look at the condition of people who are more deeply in ignorance and ask if they want to be like that. When people are in deeply in ignorance, deeply intoxicated, if there's someone who's deeply intoxicated or crazy, people, even when they're walking by them, they steer far away. Not even because they're afraid, it's because there's something that makes you... Yes? So no one wants deeper ignorance. So therefore, how can ignorance... If ignorance brings deeper ignorance... And clearly we don't want deeper ignorance. How can we think that ignorance brings happiness? No one wants it. Ugh. Did that deal with your question or not?
It seems like you don't have to try to sleep in. It seems like that can be pleasurable.
You don't have to. Okay, be more specific. Such as?
Like people my age, they're driving to the university, they don't get a job, it's skin intoxicated.
So that's ignorance. Do you think they're happy? Do they think they're happy? Really? I think they may be deluded into thinking they're happy, and sometimes that's there. But if you know them more intimately, you see and they reveal to their friends and their psychiatrists or whatever that there's very deep, deep sadness and frustration and insanity just below the surface. But the bluff, that's the material world, it's a bluff. The bluff is, yes, I'm happy. How wonderful. But it is a bluff. Does anyone know anyone like that? Who does those kind of things and makes believe they're happy? Does anyone, some of us maybe even had little experience being like that. It's not a happy life. Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.